time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Okay, good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. We're going to be talking to Bridget Hammerquist on Kauai. And as you may recall, the dairy there at Kauai, at Poipu area. And what we want to do is give you a basic update for a couple of minutes, and we will be talking about that. And let me get her online. Good morning, Bridget. How are you?
Good morning, Carol. I'm good. How are you?
I'm just fine. Just trying to jiggle knobs here. But anyway, thanks for calling, and I didn't mean to give you a last-minute call, but I overlooked the email you sent me talking about the efforts, and apparently you have a new lawyer. And if I could just get an update on what's happening with the dairy issue at Kauai.
Sure. I think that first there's a group of people that live here in the South Shore that volunteered their time over the last 9 months. It's close to a year now. February 27th was the rollout for us from the dairy announced to the community that they intended to put in this industrial operation right above Mahalapu Beach. If any of your listeners know Mahalapu, it's a beautiful area on Kauai, just east of the Grand Hyatt, about 1.7 miles away. And they proposed to bring 2,000 cows, dairy cows, and set up a milk operation. They're going to produce milk, and they plan to chill it, put it in containers, and ship it off-island to be sold to Meadow Gold. They're contracting with Meadow Gold at the present, they said, and Meadow Gold takes the milk and processes it, packages it, and sells it. The Hawaii Dairy Farms just produces the milk. And so we started looking into what that would do to the environment to have that type of production in Mahalapu Valley. Mm-hmm. And I think for all of us, it's been a learning curve with lots of hours and lots of time. But we've tried really hard because we're very concerned about the South Shore. As we researched and read, we learned more and more about the dangers of cow manure, especially when it's on an industrial scale, when there's really large volume. Mm-hmm. And they're going to start with a herd, you know, Carol, that's not as big as their full herd, but it's going to be close to 700 cows at the start, and they're pregnant because they need them to be to lactate. And then they're going to morph up to 2,000 cows. Mm-hmm. So the latest is that we've gotten their soil studies and their drainage studies and their KSAT readings, and we've come to an appreciation of the fact that there's really going to be a serious problem in Mahalapu because it's this wonderful clay-based soil primarily, and the Hawaiians found that sort of gray, powdery soil very nourishing and use it for medicinal purposes. Mm-hmm. And the taro growers from years past and potato growers found it great because it holds water. It forms a natural bowl. But that's not what you want when you're piling on manure and urine at the volume that these cows will do. And they put out their own waste management plan, and we obtained a copy from the state. And it described for us in detail what would be produced in the way of animal waste. Mm-hmm. And basically there's going to be 3 million pounds of wet manure a month and 200,000 gallons of urine, mm-hmm. which is pretty impactful to the surrounding area. And it's about 8/10 of a mile from Mahalapu Beach, and that's sort of the start of the whole South Shore coastline. Mm-hmm. So we've been reading and researching, and in the course of that, we've been following several states on the mainland that are having really serious, serious problems. New Mexico, Wisconsin, Oregon, Washington, and the problems they're having are with industrial dairies producing so much waste that it seeps into groundwater, contaminates wells. There's a condition called blue baby syndrome that occurs mm-hmm. when the nitrate level in the water rises from the manure. It rises and it gets into people's wells, and then it goes into formula, and it actually causes oxygen starvation in babies, and they get blue like they did when they had heart defects, and they can die. They succumb and die from it. So they're having that problem in the mainland as well as overseas. They're having problems with bacterial pollution where people are getting sick. They're having to shut down wells and import water. There's a couple hamlets, much like Poipu. There's an area in Wisconsin, Kewaunee, Wisconsin, where there's 3,000 people, kind of like our population, and they can't drink any of their water.
And this is a direct association or caused by dairy farming or in relationship to dairy?
It absolutely is. It's well documented, and so we've been reading, studying, and really trying to learn, Carol. And in the process, we came across a couple recent decisions, one by the Supreme Court in Wisconsin, where they had made a determination that not only was the cow waste responsible, but they classified it as a industrial pollutant. And a similar thing happened just recently in the state of Washington that was pretty, it was described in the Yakima Herald as an industry changing decision because a federal judge applied RCRA, it's RCRA, it's a division, a body of law that the EPA has, and it's used normally for hazardous waste, you know, industrial waste, what you typically see from chemical production and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And they took this body, the federal judge took the body of law that's referred to as RCRA, or the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, mm-hmm. and he applied it and the standards used in RCRA to the cow manure and urine that was being produced by an industrial dairy in Washington. And prior to that, the farmers have argued that this is agricultural waste, not industrial waste, and it's a natural part of farming, and that they didn't come under that body of law. And the federal judge said, no, this is a toxic substance, this is hazardous to the environment, it will come under this body of law. And he ruled as a matter of law in response to a summary judgment motion, which was really a big deal. It's a 111-page opinion. So we don't want that to happen to the South Shore in Kauai. Mm-hmm. So we read his decision, we read his opinion, and we want somebody here in Hawaii to help who has the knowledge base. You know, I mean, this is all new for the state of Hawaii. We don't have industrial dairy here yet. A dairy farm, a sustainable dairy farm, is a farm that doesn't have to import grain, doesn't have to treat its milk elsewhere, shipping it off. I mean, sustainable generally means that the farm is able to sustain itself and it can produce an end product that can be consumed. And that's not happening here. They know they don't have enough land. That's the other issue with the pollution. The total farm size is now down below 578 acres, and there's only about 500 of it that's going to be grazed by 2,000 cows.
Right. Now, if you would, in your email, you were speaking about certain aspects of good news. You have a new attorney joining your forces.
Yes, we contacted
Charlie
Tebbett. We contacted lead attorney mm-hmm. who handled the Washington case. Mm-hmm. And if your listeners want to read about him, he has a site on the internet. It's called Charlie Tebbett. It's TEBBUTT.com, charlietebbett.com. And he's been 27 years in environmental law, and he's spent his whole life, Carol, trying to protect the environment and save us from ourselves with our various enterprises. And the cow waste production and its impact to the land and the water that it touches is long-lasting, and it is significant. I mean, it gets into the water. We have streams coming across this proposed dairy site. It'll go right to the ocean. It'll have a freight train ride right to the sea.
Now, in the Washington case, what was you indicated that he handled that case. What was some of the most memorable parts of that or of interest to your organization, the parallels that would draw?
One, that there was groundwater, stream contamination, and drinking water contamination, all of which we're worried about here.
Mm-hmm.
Until most of us in this community, until we started really studying this matter, we didn't realize our drinking water comes from three large wells that just happened to be under 1,000 feet from the dairy site. Mahalapu is an area where there's caves and lava tubes, and it's rich in Hawaiian history. It's where the Battle of Kamehameha's troops came ashore, and they couldn't conquer Kauai. I mean, that's just a really important historical thing that Kauai's real proud of. Our Makuhea Cave down there is described as I'll coin a phrase that our Garden Island used not long ago in an article, a clear view into the past. I went to a lecture by Dr. Chuck Blay recently, and he is an environmental student, if you will, but his real training is in studying tectonic plates and volcanic activity, and he said that the Makuhea Cave in all of Hawaii is probably the most valuable archaeological site in the state.
Mm-hmm.
We're able to date plant material back 10,000 years and study the flow of people. They can actually see there's these special layers of mud, that soil that I described that holds water.
So that the listeners will understand, I mean, when take the whole kitchen sink and throw out there.
Yeah.
Will this? I'm assuming you're speaking as to say or suggest that the dairy's operation and the placement of the dairy will have a direct impact or negative impact on these resources.
Yes.
I understand the Native Hawaiians, but one will be hard pressed to talk about what was done many years ago, and when in fact, how many Native Hawaiians really have access to, a lot of it is private access, but just so that people don't think we're trying to place a ploy out here, what you're saying is that cave, like I went, it would be directly impacted possibly just from the stream flow or heavy rains or what have you, correct?
Yes, and this is not based on anything we're making up. Actually, this area was studied through a National Park Reconnaissance Survey,
mm-hmm.
that Senator Inouye encouraged and fostered and supported, and it was over a process of years, Carol, that particular valley, Mahalapu Valley, and the coastal community, the whole coastal area, was studied by the National Park Service, mm-hmm. because they were looking into making it a national park. There never was an agreement reached with the landowner, Grove Farm, who's then had just been purchased by Steve Case. They never did come to an agreement on securing or obtaining the land, because the owner pretty much has to either sell their land to a trust or donate their land to finalize the National Park Service acquisition. And so that process didn't get completed, but the National Park did finish their study, and it's published. That's also online, available online, National Park Reconnaissance Survey, Mahalapu, and it was a 63-page report with colored photographs, And on page 29 of that report, Carol, it's pretty exciting. They describe the entire watershed of the valley, where all the sources of water are that go through that valley. And the most important thing they point out is that the water sources in that valley are hydrologically linked. They go down, they come into the valley, they go down into the ground some places, and other places they run down and join a stream because they travel on the surface because of the clay soil. And they join a stream and they all converge just Mauka of this cave, the Makawahi Cave. And so that means when they say they're all hydrologically linked, that means that whatever you're putting on the land, on the dairy site, is going to get into the water. It is likely. And we've had an engineer actually prepare a written report that was sent to, we didn't do it, it was a gentleman who's an engineer with CH2M Hill on Oahu prepared a report. It was sent to the Department of Health describing the fact that it is probable that the wells will be contaminated. It's unavoidable is the way he described it because of the water distribution and the watershed in that area. And so we're trying to avoid that. And so we called Charlie Tebbett and said, will you help us? Mm-hmm. And it's pretty exciting. He said he would. And he plans to work with our attorney here, Linda Paul, right. Local counsel.
Now, you have a petition. And how is that going? How many names have you obtained? And are you still actively seeking signatures? And if so, how does one get to see that or participate?
Oh, thanks for asking. Yeah, friendsofmahalapu.org. It's all one word. And Mahulepu is really how it's pronounced and spelled. It's M-A-H-A-U-L-E-P-U, Mahulepu. So it's friendsofmahulepu.org. And there's a petition on the site that people can sign. And the nice thing about signing online is that they can make comments as well. Mm-hmm. And it's a letter that we wrote to Governor Ige. We want to bring this to his attention, you know, because we think it's really important. Can you imagine? I can't even imagine. Poipu Beach is like the visitor destination on this island. And it is just a little over 2 miles from this industrial dairy. But with the current and the tides, the waste that hits the water at Mahulepu is down at Poipu within minutes. In fact, when we rolled out the petition on December 31st, Carol, our first signers were the lifeguards at the beach. They actually rushed over to us as we were setting up our table and said, we want to sign. You're here about the Mahulepu. You're here about the dairy, right? And I said, yes, right. And I said, you know about this? And they said, oh, my gosh, yes. We have a keiki pool here. He said, you see that current? He said, whatever goes in the water up at Mahulepu is going to come tracking right into this keiki pool, and it's going to get trapped in there, and we're not going to pass our clean water that we've enjoyed for years. It's going to be gone. Mm-hmm. And Poipu Beach did get, just this last year, a 3-star rating for the cleanliness of its water.
Now, how many signatures do you currently have?
Oh, you asked. We have over 3,000 since December 31st mm-hmm. to the petition to Governor Ige.
And how is your response to the letter? Has he? And when did you send it, and what is his response currently?
Well, we sent him a copy of it on the 18th, middle of January, asking for a few minutes of his time to bring the petition to him and to bring this matter to his attention. And I was told by his secretary last week that we are in the process of obtaining an appointment, and they asked a few more details, like how much time we needed and who would be there. Mm-hmm. And apparently there are a lot of different citizen groups that do ask for the time with him, and so we'll have to wait our turn. And she wasn't able to say how long it would take to get the appointment, but we're out here. We'll see him as soon as he can see us.
Mm, okay, I hope that's soon, because the wheels are grinding and turning. And just to update you, as you may recall, I had made while you were present with me here at the State Health Department, I made a request to be able to physically review the documents related to this at Clean Water Branch.
Well, yes.
They sanitize and scrutinize everything to the point where they gave me a CD, never providing me that opportunity to physically view them as is allowed by law, the UIPA of the 92F, and gave me some select documents. And I have, in fact, filed a complaint and a request. And they have admitted, so that you'll know, they've admitted that they withheld certain emails relevant to this subject. And so we're now at not a standoff, it's just that I'm chasing them on the subject that they now have to go back to the Attorney General, Deputy, and ask permission or get him to define what is releasable or not. Now, we're in 2015 with a new governor. You would think they've been there for a while. They would know what is releasable and what's not and what they can and what they have to redact. So, for your knowledge, there are other documents out there, and I've asked them at a minimum to index each item that they are withholding. And they've acknowledged that they are withholding things, and I believe unlawfully, but we'll see what happens. So that's just a little bit for you, Nest Egg, for you to know that. Come along. Please call me as a witness, and I would love to submit that they, in fact, admitted that they're withholding documents. They don't believe that they even have to index them, advise what they're withholding and what is the justification.
Gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, well, you just remember where you are. You're in Kauai, but you're still in the state of mind in Hawaii.
Thank you, Carol. You've been great. I mean, I have to thank you for your interest in our plight. I mean, it's, we're sitting here kind of shaking our heads saying, gosh, can this really happen? And we don't want to have to sue anybody. It's very expensive. It's disruptive. I mean, I'm hoping that Charlie Tebbit can get involved and maybe with, some good correspondence and good conversation. I mean, Grove Farm has over 40,000 acres on this island that they manage, own, and it's just like there has to be a site other than right in the lap of a beautiful beach and coastline. I mean, that's what's ruined New Zealand.
Well, it sounds as if when we actively get involved in these efforts or say no to development or question it, it's as if we're being radical, but let's just go back to the basic facts. This is the earth. This is the planet we live on. This is our home. Cows generate methane. We know there's global warming. We're in the middle of the freaking Pacific when all currents come and go. And we belittle this subject and these concerns by claiming it's political or what have you. No, how about a basic, if we're going to live here and it's our home, we owe respect to that, and it's only wise to preserve. And this, there's so many limits that can be placed here in Hawaii of what can be and can't be, and what the resources can tolerate, carrying capacity. So this discussion that they would like to engage in, that if we care, we're some kind of oddball. And the reality is, we're just trying to preserve, even if it is a postage stamp on this big planet, it's worth saving. And if everybody adopt that mindset, wouldn't you think that we probably have a better country, better climate, better quality of life? What do you say?
I just, for those of us who live here and who play there and who've seen the mud soil, and I mean, I was out there on a site visit a week ago, and it had rained during the night, Carol, and the skies broke in the morning, kind of the Hawaiian day, right? The blue skies came out, the sun was up, it was really warm, and all across the surface of this valley were these pools of water. Mm-hmm. I mean, ponds and ponds. I mean, my yard in Kailua doesn't have that because the soil drains here. Mm-hmm. And they did drainage studies, and they talk about the KSAT readings, and one of our Hui members pointed out that the soil in over 300 acres of the farm, that soil is considered saturated or impervious after a fifth of an inch falls. So once it's wet with a fifth of an inch, it holds no more, okay?
Right.
And they're going to irrigate almost 40, it's over, it's 0.39 inches when they spray with their overhead irrigation. They're going to spray an area 47 acres at a time, giving it 0.39 inches. And so they're going to go beyond the saturation point with overhead irrigation, and then you're going to have the other thing about the farm that we didn't talk about today, we have before, is that the manure and urine, they are not collecting it, unlike other places. They're leaving it on the ground. It's called a land application of waste. They're planning on it, 90% of the waste staying on the pastures right where it falls. The other 10% that falls in the barns and the raceways, they're going to wash that into effluent holding ponds. And then they're going to take the contents of the holding pond, dilute it, and run it through the irrigators and spray it back onto the pasture. Mm-hmm. And this is the way they want to grow the grass. But right. In the process, if the soil won't absorb, where's it going to go, Carol?
Right. I was going to ask you, you mentioned briefly about it, but the percolating factor, and will the amount of water that or waste that they're introducing on a daily, will it exceed? I mean, at some point, the land can take some, but will it exceed or overwhelm, or the production, I should ask, will it be more, be produced faster than the soil can receive it and process it and percolate? Then you're going to have sheet flow, a flow, a pooling, a standing of this material? Is that possible?
Yeah, that's very probable.
So that's what you're concerned with.
Their own documents report that it's saturated after a fifth of an inch.
Okay.
And they're going to irrigate 0.39 inches.
Okay.
And they're going to spread that out, and every 40 hours there's going to be a 50-acre parcel area that's going to get at least 0.39 inches. So they're going to go beyond the saturation point just in what they apply, not to mention what might be happening with, you know, what the cows are putting down on the ground. And the water, there's springs there that bring water onto the farm. There's a stream, the Wailapili Stream runs through the farm, and that's the thing that was made by the National Park Service before any dairy was contemplated back in 2007. The National Park Service, you know, looked at this and said, this area is hydrologically linked. Mm-hmm. It's got an intricate watershed that runs over the ground, into the ground in areas, into streams in areas, through lava tubes, and they all converge. That's what they meant by hydrologically linked. They say they all converged. Mauka of the Makawahi Cave, just above Gillen's Beach, right at the ocean.
Right there by the Gillen's residence, correct?
Right, right. Yeah, there is a private residence really close to the farm. And they have a private well there that serves that residence. And
well,
so
I this doesn't sound too good, or the picture that I'm going to portray, but I remember standing there with Jay and his wife.
The Kitchlowians, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm just standing there thinking to myself, what a memorable view and a place to be. And then you see brown foam and coming out of the river.
Yeah.
And collecting in the ocean and standing there seeing the sand brown, not from brown because of the color of the weathered rock or oxidation, but simply brown foam with a very serious smell of fecal matter. And so the debate still stands, whether it's from guards in a shack or pigs in the water or what have you. They're really, really chancy. I'm willing to share this with you publicly, and then I'll let you go. Imagine, they are saying now the quality of the water and the milky color and the high bacteria counts there is from wild pigs or animals, possibly, right?
Right.
Now, that's
the other thing. They did establish that the stream now is one of the most polluted waterways we have in the state.
I understand, but here, and that's from a limited population of wild hogs.
Yeah, just the native, just the feral animals that are in the valley that live there.
Now, imagine if they're willing to say that small, isolated population, and it's not a very large one,
no,
causing and contributing the degradation of this stream, imagine their willingness to just say, well, we're going to bring a number of cows and we're going to dump this. And wouldn't you think they'd be a little cautious about making such statements and get down to the real problem that the hydrology of that area is going to present a problem to the public and to the resources if they are allowed to go through with this cow pasturing or dairy?
I certainly would think so. I mean, I remember when we learned 9 months ago about the fact that the water was as polluted as it was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I remember saying to a marine biologist here, you know, what does that mean? And he said, well, that tells you that whatever's living in that valley is already putting a waste into water, mm-hmm. and it's absolutely showing that it converges right above the cave, like you saw,
mm-hmm.
and it means you can't add any more livestock. You can't add any more animals to that valley because then your concentration is going to go up so high, your ocean is going to carry the pollutants to the swimmers. You're gonna be, you know, making children sick. You're gonna be spreading this Enterococcus and nitrate levels, and the reefs are gonna go. He said it's not safe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we have super high numbers. I think people feel that it is in part due to the grubbing and grading that the dairy's been doing for the last 10 months. Because they've opened up ditches and cleaned out a lot of areas, and there was there were animals in there. There were cattle on that site, not in the numbers that are proposed, but you know, 50 to 150 head grazed in that valley, and many of them were moved out when the dairy farm came to lease the land. The farmers were asked to take their cattle to other sites, and Grow Farm arranged relocation of several small farmers,
mm-hmm.
but they were beef cattle, not dairy.
But the cows aren't that discreet. They don't stand in the water and drink and then decide, well, let me go up the hill and go to the bathroom.
No, no. And, well, the raceways are about 10 feet from this huge ditch irrigation system. So if they're peeing 10 feet away and there's hundreds of them doing it, yeah, it's going to make it there. I mean, they even describe the fact that they made the raceways with sloped edges,
mm-hmm.
so the cow waste would drain off and the cows wouldn't be walking through and standing in their own manure, you know. They want it to drain off to the sides, and they feel that vegetation is going to somehow, you know, stop the flow, but it's not. I mean, there's so many farms, Carol, in New Mexico and in Idaho and Wisconsin and Washington and Oregon. They're all having these problems. I mean, I read the Facebook page of, if people go to Friends of Mahalapu Facebook page, we've got a lot of articles and we've got detailed descriptions by communities in the mainland that are near industrial dairies that have gone through terrible, terrible problems with pollution and changes, permanent changes to their environment. The biting flies that carry disease, that's a big part of this industry. They have, the waste attracts millions and millions of biting flies. They reproduce, they love the manure, it's a source for them to breed, and there's nothing to stop them. The manure is not going to be covered, it's just going to be laying out there for them to lay their eggs and propagate. And they travel 4 miles. We have an industrial entomologist retired on island. He worked in dairy. And he said these flies will propagate and they'll be in the billions. In 6 months, we'll have populations of billions of biting flies. And then we went back and found this big study that was done by Virginia Tech, university standard, you know, style study. It's huge, and it's well-documented, and they list something like 16 diseases that the biting flies can communicate from the cows to humans. And it's, I mean, it's serious stuff.
Well, the disease really don't bother me. I've had biting flies to bite, and let me tell you, I would probably want the disease. Those boogers can sting. And by the way, right here at Campbell Industrial Park, where they had the housing, the slaughterhouse, and they used to house the cattle and pigs and whatever for slaughter.
Yeah.
If you were to go out there fishing or sunbathing or sitting on the beach, you would get carried away. In fact, you'd hear the big flies discussing, or with the little flies, should we eat them inside or outside? I mean, they can bite, and they are painful, you know. So now that reduced the number of cows and the activity and the processing, the number of flies are really rare now to get a biting fly there, but it is a reality.
Yeah.
So is that, I offer that so that people don't think, well, you know, these environmentalists or the people with money or the newcomers want to create some subterfuge or some information that's not correct or accurate. The reality is this poses, in my opinion, poses the greatest risk yet that this fragile environment here called Hawaii cannot tolerate. At some point, it's a breaking point, you know?
Yeah.
We want to treat this like it's we have a massive land area, surface land, when in fact this is an island community within the state, very fragile. And we need to be careful as to what we do with it, in my opinion. Why not farm it? And I know farming would be detrimental too with chemicals, but there are some, you know, organics and what have you. There could always be something better, a better use.
Well, it does have... there is a taro farm in there now, the Horiguchi taro farm, and it's been there for years. And, in fact, I don't know how they feel about it, but they've kind of wrapped the dairy site around the... It wraps right around the taro farm.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the taro farmer probably won't mind the manure because it does... It's a good source of fertilization for the taro, you know. But it that valley did used to be used all in taro and sweet potato, and some of the Hawaiian people that descendants are here tell us that there was a time in the 1880s and 1900s where they were shipping in and out of Kalua Landing, and they provided much of the sweet potatoes for the west coast of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's been cultivated, and I think cultivation in that form is much more desirable.
Well, okay. Well, I appreciate anything else you want to share. Is there any new events coming up? Or let me ask you this one thing, and I don't know if you want to talk about it. Did you folks resolve that issue on the T-shirt, or can you talk briefly about it?
There wasn't a resolution as much as a decision that it's best to discourage any further activity in that vein, and I think that's kind of what has been decided. And you know, it was an ugly incident. You know, to have hate speech come to a community meeting, and the people who did it didn't even know what meeting they were coming to. They were just told that there was this group that wanted to go in and poison the pigs that they hunt, you know, and that was a...
So there was some misinformation. So we don't leave a cliffhanger here.
Yeah.
What had happened, someone wore or came and distributed shirts at a meeting that you folks had held that said, I would rather have cows and hogs than a howley. And I think if there's resolution and it was misinformation on the part of someone trying to create a bad situation, I hope they don't prevail.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And it was actually a meeting, not of Friends of Mahalapu, but it was an Ahumoku meeting. It was a meeting of the Hawaiian community here.
Mm-hmm.
It was intending to foster ill will, but fortunately the Moku representative conducting the meeting and Leimana De Mate, the executive director from Oahu, they mm-hmm. conducted themselves really well and, you know, held the meeting.
Well,
event.
Well, the two of you have so much in common. They don't want any bull, and you don't want any bull, I'm sure.
Not in that location, no.
No, I mean in any part of this process.
Oh, Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Sorry, I'm from Mississippi.
There's some meetings coming up on Kauai, if you have any listeners, on February 12th and 14th. Mm-hmm. The MOCU representative for this area is having a gathering both at the public school, the Kaloa Library, and at the park down at the beach here, the Prince Kahuhio Park, they're organizing the Apua here and trying to protect the valley. The Hawaiians really do use Mahalapu Beach, and they use Mahalapu Valley a lot, and there's sustenance fishing, there's limu gathering, there's medicinal plant use.
That place is beautiful. But
it is a gorgeous place. Have your visitors go to friendsofmahalapu.org, or another really great site, Carol, is cavereserve.org. If they want to see an active archaeological dig in Hawaii that was exciting findings. You know, they have the Hawaiian people back 600-700 years migrating in through the valley. They're finding their cooking implements. There's a lot of things that are coming out of the cave because it's been preserved by that mud there. But cavereserve.org is a beautiful site with beautiful pictures. They can see what this coastline looks like that we're talking about. Or friendsofmahalapu.org.
Let me ask you this. Your meetings, are you streaming them audio at all or streaming them live at any time so that people on this island can hear?
We haven't had that ability as at the present. We have them on YouTube.
Well, let's talk, and I think we can.
But they can go to friendsofmahalapu.org, and they're loaded on the website.
Well, I understand.
They can click a button. Yeah,
I know you have all of that. I'm talking real time, where as we're speaking now, others are listening,
yes,
island-wide or nationwide to hear exactly, and I think that is something you might want to consider. Hold on, just in case someone has a question for you.
Sure.
Good morning. Hi, Carol.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
Hi, ma'am. Thanks for working so hard to be friends of the land. I think everybody here has just been commercialized to the point of being nihilistic. What is the thing we can do to look at sustainability and help some kind of a Hawaiian nation return so they can enjoy their land, their foods, their customs, their practices, their culture, and really have something to offer? Because right now, Hawaii is just being used instead of, I guess, doing the state motto, the life of the land is perpetuated in righteousness. What can we do to make this farm successful and part of an island's sustainability?
Well, the first thing would be to pick a safe location where it's not going to run into the ocean. I mean, they found that in New Zealand. They actually passed a law there that are now prohibiting dairy operations from being anywhere close to streams, rivers, or estuaries where they flow into the ocean, and we shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't have to reinvent that wheel. We shouldn't repeat what's been done down there and have the same thing happen here. So, a safe location. We've got lots of acreage. We've got some beautiful grazing acreage up in the mountains above Hanapepe. Just gorgeous, with lots of water and rain and grasslands. It might be more difficult to get to with truck, but, you know, it's doable.
That lots of water and rain is good if you say they're going to have that, I don't know what you call it, the doo-doo and the pee-pee get rinsed into the soil.
Yeah.
I guess that's how they did it in New Zealand, where they're just going to let it lay around and then go back into the soil to provide, I guess, nitrogen and things like that.
Well, that's the plan, but, you know, it's interesting because I've talked to a number of agricultural and horticultural people who tell me that manure and urine, when it comes out of the animal, yeah, you could leave it on the ground, but it really isn't an efficient fertilizer for quite a while. It has to degrade. It doesn't get to feed the grass.
Well, you would need legumes and nitrogen-fixing nodules and plants with that, and so. But this would be a ruse if we start engaging in such conversation. It's the immediate threats that you're concerned
yes.
with.
And yes, yes.
And the science and the soil, you know, and all of that. Yeah.
But when he talks about sustainability, they call themselves a sustainable farm. But and there was an article in the Star Advertiser written by the head of the Honolulu Business Council who said, let's give them a chance to overcome their externalities, which means, you know, I mean, she's admitting that they have to import grain, that, that they're not sustainable. I mean, they have to export the product to be processed elsewhere. It's not being finished. It's not ready for sale when it leaves here. And so, you know, and they're like, why aren't you excited about what we're offering Kauai? And we're like, are you kidding? You're coming here and making a big mess and taking the product away, and you want us to be excited about that?
What about our governor? He made the point that he was going to value Hawaiian cultures. How is he involved in a leadership role in the issues like Monsanto and in the issues of industrial farming?
Well, that's what we want to find out. That's why we wrote him. And it's, you know, you can see the letter that we wrote him. It's on our website, friendsofmahalapu.org. And we said, you know, help us. And I hope he's good to his word. I saw that, too, in the State of the State speech. I was pretty excited about that because that's what we need. And the Hawaiian people here are trying to say, hey, that valley is not going to be able to be used, and it's going to be damaged forever with that weight.
Well, we can talk about it forever, but that's like what one of these guys, Molokai Matt, says. This English language is all nouns. We need to put in practice behavior that would either make it or break it. We have to get schooled in the behaviors we should practice, and those behaviors would put demands into the economy, and then the economy will serve those demands. And we just need to have the right values instead of single-serving half-and-halves, so to say.
I couldn't agree more. And so we say a better location, one that works with the environment, where the soil isn't clay, where it is. I mean, there are parts of Honopepe and Kamakani and Waimea. There's beautiful, beautiful areas with soil that perks and can help process and absorb and safely handle the cow waste.
And we can try to manage it by using our dollars wisely, our spending correctly, and have a person teaching us good values. I hope the governor would set the pace.
Yeah, we hope so, too.
Well, thanks for the chat, and I'll listen on.
All right, and if you would, call, if you're inclined to, call the governor and ask him to set up, grant the community a meeting from Kauai.
I'm almost a little afraid to go into that square building. Have you seen the guard there? Jesus Christ, he looks like he's made out of titanium and has a head that's as hard as a rock.
Well, what you do, I think we see the softer side of this administration. We will no longer go as individuals. I think the best answer is to just hire a lobbyist. And then you're more likely to be succeeding in getting what you want.
Yeah, that leads more to a political and a process than a result. And our result will come by spending our dollars properly.
Yeah.
That's how you can shift things. People that don't get money will close their doors. People that do will expand, and we just have to pick the right things to expand here.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Well, thank you. And
thank you.
Bridget.
Nice to talk to you guys.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. Thanks for your interest. But, yeah, if you could even just be one of the people that goes online, sign the petition and make a comment. That's a real, real effective way to do it.
You know what's really nice about this, the radio show and all, I call you up and ask you, can you come on for 15 minutes? And you know it's been an hour practically.
Oh, no. Sorry.
No.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Well, Carol, you do a great service for the community. You really do.
I mean, and you get to hear these are the brilliant listeners out there in Radio Land. It's amazing how many people out there got ideas and comments and thoughts, you know. And my friend here, he would love to, I know in his mind, he's probably hoping that he could get some of that manure for his hemp farm.
I'm all about the industrial use of it, and I can lean into the spiritual applications, and I'm really impressed with the CBD value for muscle relaxation and pain relief.
Now,
it's a wonderful thing.
Bridget was a former nurse, so be careful when you start talking medical use.
Yeah, you got to use our vocabularies carefully.
Yeah, so just
Goldstein
remember.
Says, this is not health food, but it won't kill you.
It's all about that hemp, about that hemp, about that hemp. It's all
about, yeah.
Well, about the hemp. I don't know why they criminalized it. We're supposed to be free, basically. and freedom of expression. You know, I wouldn't want to be sitting in a park smoking a joint or something and offending somebody that didn't want to see it. But we all have to live in the same space here. We're piled on top of each other.
Yeah, and so that reduces the stress, I guess. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. We'll see you in the next hour. And Bridget, anything to tell them all? I said hello, and I hope this thing is progressing where the positive side, at least the state come clean with their records, and that which will afford the community or at least to be able to put up a fight or offer some rebuttal, some informed rebuttal.
But I hope so too, Carol. And I can't tell you how grateful we are to find, you know, federal district judges. And in his opinion, Judge Thomas wrote, any attempt to diminish the dairy's contribution to the nitrate contamination mm-hmm. is disingenuous. Mm-hmm. And I think that's starting to happen all over the United States with the industrial-scale dairies. They are recognizing they're producing such a volume of waste in such a small, concentrated area. Mm-hmm. The land and water can't handle it.
Right. So, okay. Well,
okay.
Listen, I appreciate it, and I will call you and try to steer you. I think you'll find this pretty attractive to incorporate this live radio. Your listeners or your people, supporters and all, can get it instantly. So I'll,
thank you.
And what's really good, it's affordable.
Yes.
I mean, for us nonprofits and everybody, but it's...
Yeah, I know. That's a big deal, Carol.
Yeah, but I think I really would like to talk to you about it and help you set it up, and you'll find that, wow, it's a flip of a switch.
Thank you so much.
All righty.
You've been just wonderful.
And I hope I can continue to... support and I haven't ever had them to call up. I've invited them, the opposing or the proposing, the dairy and all, to come on, but I guess we don't show up on their radar.
Oh.
But anyway, thank you, and say hello to all of them, and we'll see you folks soon.
Thank you, Carol. Thanks. Come to Kauai anytime. You're always welcome.
All righty.
All right. Help us keep our South Shore beautiful.
All righty. Aloha. Okay. All right, we'll be back shortly, and we're going to see what we do here. And yeah, my technician is a little ill today, so hope he gets well.
Hey, ballpan, can't you hear me when I'm... Can't you hear me when I call? Well, you ain't so big. You just told a dog. Got me waking, but man, waking around the fire. I want a little rain of water. Let you want it, Jimmy Starr, big boy. Can't you hear me when I call? Well, you ain't.
For the second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on KWAI. This has been the Carol.
Snakes there in that grass, grandma's mountains. Grandma's hand soothed the local unwed mother. Grandma's hand used to ache sometimes and swell. Grandma's hand used to lift her face and tell her she'd say, baby, Grandma, understand that you really love that man. Put yourself in Jesus' hands, Grandma's hand. Grandma's hand used to hand me a piece of candy. Grandma's hand picked me up each time I fell. Grandma's hand, boy, they really came in a handy. She'd say, Matty, don't you whip that boy. What you wanna spank him for? He didn't drop no apple core, but I don't have Grandma anymore. If I get to heaven, I'll look for Grandma.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Okay, hey, good morning and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Thanks for joining me. Now, you can pick this up at Carol at carolcox.com, carolcox.com. Normally KWAI, but we had a problem here, a router problem, so we'll fix that. But again, as a backup, go to carolcox.com and you can get it live. And we apologize for the difficulty, but we tried best we can. But anyway, we've been talking about oil and molasses and spills and what have you, and I want to get into a discussion with you and share with you this recent spill, or I don't know what you would call it, if it's really constitute a spill or just a blatant disrespect for the land and the law and the people. And that is absolutely, we've been having some serious problems down there at Sand Island. Now, mind you, and before I go any further, I had something said to me the other day that I just thought, I don't think things could get any dumber, but then I guess it is possible that we are gravitating. You know, we reach our highest peak in evolution and fast thinking and good thinking and brilliancy, and we become stupid again. Maybe that's a cycle. Maybe that's the beginning of the sixth extinction, whatever it is. And that is, well, we have, do you realize what amount of oil we already have in the ground out there? So why should you be upset about more oil in the ground? So I'll leave that up to you folks. And if you got some way of responding to that, I thought, well, maybe if I respond to that, I might get carted off in a suit, because I'd be crazy to attempt to answer such a, I don't know what you would call it. This spill that we see down here at the Hawaii Fueling Facilities Corporation. Now, mind you, I'm not one of those people to say I told you so, but I told you so, that spill, there's a lot more to that spill and the activities and the behavior down there than we would wish to acknowledge or admit. And my purpose is, while I want to be cordial with everybody and I want to be liked by everybody and I want to like everybody, but the reality is, there's money, there are people with jobs and with government jobs and privileges, and it has become a government, not just only not work for the people. Government now has a mindset that the people are to be kept in the dark. You negotiate and you work with business, because business is a driving force and the mechanism to our economy. And so therefore the people even though I'm working for the government, we've lost control over that, and we've lost the respect of those that who we hire to carry out our wishes or to protect our best interests. And this HFFC matter demonstrates that, and I'm going to share with you some tidbits today that and I've always said, and I don't know if it's corruption or it's just a way of things and the nature of the beast here now, but it's, whatever it is, it does not serve the best interests of the people, the public, the environment, or the flora and fauna that's out there in the environment. Good morning, caller. You have a comment, a question?
Yes, how are you today, Mr. Cox? I like your show very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know if this will help, but when you go into the intelligence community, right, they go up many, many levels above top secret, like 37 levels higher than that. That's just one small example. Mm-hmm. The other small example is, you know, the country was set up, and people think it's Christian, but it's not, man. This is a Masonic country. It was set up by Masons. Mm-hmm. So the whole concept of secrecy was always a part of the government. And then when the Federal Reserve took over the country in 1912 or 13, that was done in secret too. So, and we're not even talking about, when I said the intelligence community, it also includes the military armed forces establishment. So by the time you put all this together, along with the IMF and the World Bank, where's the people? And I didn't even touch the corporations yet, because the corporations, the universities, all these are interconnected with this whole secrecy thing of separating the people, mm-hmm. as civilians as opposed to the military. And when you break it all the way down, it's class. It's separation of classes. Mm-hmm. So all these things are affecting everything you're talking about in your shows, have direct roots into all this stuff. But the roots are so deep that all you see is the leaves on the tree, Mr. Cox. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you don't connect the roots to the tree anymore.
Right.
And beyond that, when you get into the Constitution, and I always say this, I think what Martin Luther King did was good. But you see, words are very, very powerful. Very powerful, the words we use. If we use the wrong words, we send the wrong message, or we play the right card for the wrong reason. When he used the word, when they said the civil rights, you see, that word civil rights, civil, to me, in my opinion, was the wrong message. It should have been constitutional, because in the end, all our behavior is interpreted through the Constitution. I'm talking about when we're standing, I don't care if it's a traffic jam, I don't care what it is. The real question is it right under the Constitution? Well, see, our laws have become so convoluted that to find out if something constitutional, it may come through criminal, civil, probate, but the real deal is it constitutional? And it's just like the roots. All you see is the leaves on the tree. You no longer can connect the roots to the tree. Mm-hmm. And the constitutional interpretation of everyday life, Mr. Cox, is the real culprit. People can't do that. They don't know how. Right. And law is not available to the masses. Constitutional law is not available to us. It's only available to those who are extremely wealthy, who can afford to have a team of constitutional lawyers, a team of criminal lawyers, a team of civil lawyers. And if you can't afford all that, then guess what? Your roots are separated from the leaves.
Okay.
How do you get the the roots back as the true consciousness of the leaves. That's what I see is the whole problem. And those roots I'm talking about are the elite now. Mm-hmm. I mean the real shot callers who are unseen, unheard of, people who have billions of dollars, people, regular folks that are like born into billions of dollars. I'm not talking about regular people, because regular people don't know jack what's going on. Mm-hmm. But the people who have access to, say, let's say hundreds of millions and billions of dollars, those regular people, they know what's going on, Mr. Cox. And they don't see the world as we do. Mm-hmm. They have access to the law.
Okay.
We don't. Go ahead. I'm going to take answer off the air, all right? Thank you for letting me say that, okay?
No, I'm not rushing you off.
Okay.
I have time. I just want to make sure that I get back to one point, a couple of things, and you can share with me. I've heard you call in a couple times, and there is, and not to get distracted from what I'm saying, but you are speaking to some true civil rights and constitutional rights, because civil rights, you know, are what a group of people can say. It's your civil, they're being civil about it. They're being, but constitutionally, you know, you have a right to bear arms, but then you leave it to the courts and the local jurisdictions to take your arms and subject you to certain rules that you got to register it on every Christmas before 8:30 in the morning, and on and on and on, and crazy things of that nature. So they are interchangeable when people are trying to manage you or control. But again, I don't know. Civil rights, when you talk about the tree and the roots, but it's not just that simple. It takes actions, and what I was going to lay out here is similar to that, in that if they rob you of a process, you don't have a right to participate. They keep you in the dark. This is fragmenting and containing and cornering and managing and just keeping the masses ignorant while operating on behalf of the masses, right?
Yes.
So that's this thing called the Department of Health, the Department of Land and Natural Resources, Department of whatever, Board of Water Supply. They're not there to operate. They need the people, because the people have money in their pockets. People have resources. They want to obtain those resources and manage them for their own purposes and their own good of their friends and the bigger business, but not the better interests of the people. So you're right. Hold on here, and then I'm going to a few things I definitely want to talk about, but I don't want to be rude or anything. Hold on. Caller, go ahead with your comment or question.
So you're a formal investigator, and you know motive, means, and opportunity. Well, the man that was talking about the roots and the trees, mm-hmm. the roots are the 99% of the people that carry the weight. The 1% of the people lead them. Now, when you see cities like Seattle, Chicago, New York, Dallas, they've grown, and they've gone beyond individual lifetimes, which used to be 25, 45. Now we're up to 60 and 70. The extra classifications, the extra top secret levels, and if you want to go visit that, go to abovetopsecret.com or abovetopsecret.org, kind of hides people that have, like, you know, the vampire myths and immortal myths and Highlander and stuff like that. There's a race of people that can jump off a planet called Nibiru and wind up on our planet, where we got a 365-day solar year. 365 solar year days to the people that come off of Planet X and visit us is like a second in their life, a whole year.
Yeah, so you know, what you're saying is some might... Kill your radio there. You're bleeding in over.
Okay, I got
okay.
it.
Let's say this situation down here at the spill site. Now, the state... I'm going to read one statement here. Description of threat. This is written by the EPA in their report. One of their reports. They give out a daily, weekly report. And this report says that on December 22nd, 2014, the staff at the ASIG tank farm noted a substantial shortage in the inventory of Tank 2. The storage capacity of Tank 2 is approximately 2.8 million gallons.
Yeah.
On January 1, 2015, ASIG notified the Hawaii Department of Health that they had a release of 1,000 barrels of jet fuel, 42,000 gallons, at their facility. Now, here is this. First of all, the state who regulates this, supposedly, but each time, if you notice, the EPA comes to town and then the state says, well, we relinquish it to the authority to the state, to the EPA, and EPA is leading it. And the state never goes into the property, but how is it that the state can be notified? They claim now they're saying, well, there's a document that say that they were notified, that the EPA wrote saying that it was notified by this company and in December of 2014. So the EPA writes that in their report and in their order to make them clean it up and the cost and express the cost. The state does not go on the property. The state does not do anything because they were told everything was fine. So here, 1996, there was a sizable tank release inside the facility. In 2008, there was another release from piping related to a tank. Again, inside the facility. As a result of the 2008 event, the facility owners installed a bentonite slurry barrier wall along a 3,000 linear feet of the perimeter. Now listen to this. According to the engineering firm that installed the barrier wall, quote, this barrier system will last for centuries. However, a substantial amount of the fuel has escaped the slurry wall and has been found in the near surface outside the facility within 50 yards of the marina. Now, what does that have to do with what you guys are saying? See, I don't like to talk in theory. I believe a lot of what you're saying actually exists. But I'm rarely finding anyone sitting back rather than theorizing and going out and bringing back examples. And I think if we want to move the ball down the field, closer to the goal, we got to talk not hypotheticals and if the boogie bear is in every trash can, but start to...
No, just identify the motive, the means, and the opportunities of these
administrators. Identifying them, but I don't hear anyone identifying them. I just hear the chatter, and you're laying it out that it exists. But, it's like Casper the Friendly Ghost is having a party with the rest of his friends. So, where? Well, I don't know. We can't see them. Well, at some point, you got to have something solid so people can relate to. I believe the Illuminati. I believe, like the gentleman said, about Masons. When you take the Freemasons, you have to be a free man to be a Freemason. So African Americans weren't free. So they couldn't be. That's why you come along with the Prince Hall Masons. So when we talk of these things, I don't have a lot of room in my bag for theories.
I'm not looking for conspiracy theories, and
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just trying to say to you, for example, you've called many, many, many times, and I welcome them all. But at some point, it's for me as an individual now. And don't take this personal, but it tires me to hear these theories and tell me about the National Bank, the World Bank, and all, and right under our noses, we ride by. And not to say what you're saying is not true, but practical examples, real-life examples. So these companies, consistent with what you're saying, these companies employ, first of all, they spill. The state is supposed to regulate it. The state does not regulate. So what do? You as a citizen, decide, I'm going to take it upon myself to go out and document this and let the masses know what is really going on. So as you're walking along the sidewalk, taking pictures where you're legally allowed, the police pulls up and then say, well, we got a call. We want to know what you're doing. Well, what do you mean what am I doing? I'm doing like anything else a citizen would do. Well, they're concerned you could be a terrorist, right? Now, this is how the police reacts. And in turn, the real terrorist is just dumped, and by their own words, 42,000 gallons of diesel or jet fuel into the ground. We're going to take their word for it, maybe more.
That's right. Are you taking real words? Are you got real facts? Do you have real tests? Or somebody slant drilling and stealing the jet fuel.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying the thing is when we need now to see a lot of the public believe in what these theories but we need to bring hardcore information now. We need to task ourselves with rather than being theoretical and saying booga bears are out there at night.
Well, it's not theoretical when you go through motive, means, and opportunity. What's really happening? We talk about points all day, but the principle comes through when we talk about who's.
Okay, I equate it to this. What? Well, let's have a grand old feast, and let's have a feast, and let's get together, but nobody ever get together to go get any food, real hardcore food, to sit down and have that feast. You see, it never materialized to that point, so... for the warriors out there that got many theories and like to advance them and clutter the air with these theories, and they're great. But the reality is, I'm not seeing, as you're saying, the means, the what is it?
The motive, the motive, means, and the opportunity. That's what you do to solve crime.
I got that.
If you're interested in getting through to the criminal impulse here, you've got to understand at the top the 35 layers of security clearances. What is their motive, what is their means, and what is their opportunities?
Right, but where do you start to apply that? Do you just
drive
around?
I would ask you because you're an investigator.
Well, that's what I'm doing for you. See, and my point is, enlightening is to say, it's one to be practical to the application of what you're saying. You see, do we ever come to that point? You know, like, what is it, the World Bank or the one that prints money, everybody's really saying they print money. What is it then? Federal Reserve.
Yeah, it's amazing. Money's a magic sigil.
It's a
talisman.
It's a bad thing. The Illuminati is in your toilet paper roll, a roll of toilet paper.
Heritage is the Illuminati. Twice the light and half the fat.
No, I'm just saying it's in everything. But then again, now you have not only people being screwed, you now got them paranoid. And at some point, you can't... It conflicts with what you're trying to accomplish. If you preach to them and tell them booga bears are there everywhere, and then you leave them with, well, what do we do? Well, I don't know.
You stand up to the bear.
Yeah. No. Hold on.
Okay.
Good morning, caller. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah, part of the answer is what we're doing right now. Even though it seems like there's no answer, the real problem is... the masses don't have this discussion. They don't have it. That's part of the strategy of those who control everything.
They do like, now. You got KWAI, you got the Carol Cox Show, you got the Jeff Davis.
I know. I mean, you know what? We're discussing it, but the problem is most of the masses, they don't want to know about this. All they want is a coffee, a fish sandwich, Coca-Cola, and a job.
I think see... That's where did you get your enlightenment? I mean,
I've been researching for 30 years. So.
Right. So you're 30 years old.
No, I'm older than that. I said I've been researching for 30 years.
So you and I, admittedly, like myself, I became enlightened maybe 20, 30 years ago. So by then I was dumb as a rock. Well, now I'm enlightened.
Okay, hold on. I want to share something with you even before when my enlightenment really started.
Right.
I was in elementary school.
Okay.
And the teacher said, whoever knows the answer, raise your hand. Well, guess what? Every question she asked, I knew the answer.
Mm-hmm.
So I would raise my hand. And then eventually she wouldn't call on me. And I said, well, how come you asked me to raise my hand? And you said whoever knows the answer, raise your hand. She said, oh, I just wanted to use you to motivate the other students. Now, I'm a kid.
Mm-hmm.
My first enlightenment was that she was lying to me.
Mm-hmm.
You hear me? She was lying to me.
Right.
And that's when my real enlightenment began about the world, is that the teacher was lying.
But was it for a sinister purpose? Was it to stimulate you?
Don't matter. She was lying.
Well,
she was using me and lying to me as a kid. That alone.
But was that a violation of something?
Oh, yeah. That made me not want to raise my hand again.
Well,
because she might lie to me. So, you know, it was a very serious thing to me.
Yeah, I understand. But then now that you're an adult, you realize that some trickery is okay and warranted?
No.
No?
Not in that context, no.
Well, you remember castor oil?
Yeah, I think I do.
Remember when they, your mama, your grandmother used to tell you to hold your nose and take a swallow of it?
Yeah, but you knew what you had coming after you did it the first time.
Yeah, but no,
but you knew the truth.
But she tell you, what is it in there? It's a tea. Okay, all right, you'll drink some tea with some honey in it. But you forgot that it's also castor oil in it. So, you know, there are some good. But what I'm trying to stress is that these are realities. We have a situation here where your concerns and the theories that you have is warranted. And sometimes whether they're placed properly, whatever, but they're warranted. There's no doubt in my mind that the government is as corrupt and as conniving and as controlling as it is. But we, as if we know that, we need to not scare the crap out of people and get
no. The people, no. The people do need to be. The parents need to be scared off them. They need to understand what's really going on, because just a few of us knowing don't mean nothing.
Yeah. Well,
it has no weight at all.
Today's theorist reminds me of the guy who grows up in the village, and then he's helpless, but he's fortunate enough. The village has put together monies and send him off to school, and he gets his PhD, and he comes back and he looks at them all and says, "You're a bunch of ignorant people." You see, and that's, you may have gone abroad and found out the answers, but you can't, and with caution, I would say, never convey to others, those that walk abreast of you or walked abreast of you without your PhD. Now all of a sudden you've been enlightened and they're ignorant. No, it's just that if you learn something, it's how you disseminate that information and you return and teach them with examples and hardcore examples rather than the theory.
Okay, look, if you are born inherit $1 billion, mm-hmm. a billionaire, right? I'm talking about people at this scale, real people, kids included, who are born into and people access to the world of the billions of dollars.
Now,
they don't commune with us.
Right, now, so let's get this right now.
Yes, sir.
You and I have this conversation in a real format. I'm from
yes.
Mississippi, and ain't no way in the world anybody in my family going to have $1 billion for me to inherit. Just kidding you. But
okay.
I know what you're saying. But there are so many examples, and for the people that want to enlighten people, I think these examples for government to lie to you. The State Department of Health, if you look, for example, and I keep going back to this, so gravitating back to it, you take the molasses. What happened? Well, the EPA, the state is here, but it's too big of a job for us. We're going to give it to the EPA. Big Brother's going to step in. Big Brother comes in. Now you're not privy to anything. Big Brother now is in bed with big business. And then the little people that the state, who really dare not to step up to the plate, and because, first of all, they're ignorant about the real rules. They're not taught to challenge anything. They're told to tell the truth, have truth, but put it in writing, and we have the final say in what is really provided to the public.
Which goes right back to my original concept. You see, the Constitution was the foundation of social relations, not
right.
Facebook, not telephones. You see, the absolute application
right. but it's
everyday life. That is the answer to one of these questions. How do we educate people to apply the constitutional law to their everyday life?
Well, the for example, back again, and reality here is that, let's say the EPA wrote in their report, it's called a order for removal, mitigation, or prevention of a substantial threat or oil discharge. So on page 3 of that document, it states that on December 22nd, this is a legal binding document, December 22nd, 2014, ASIG notified the Hawaii Department of Health of a possible release of 42,000 gallons. The states say, no, that never happened. The states say, well, they did tell us they suspected they were having a loss, but they never told us they had a loss in December. So that means you got 16 tanks holding 68,000 barrels individual tank holding 68,000 barrels potentially, and you're told one is leaking, and you just say, "Oh, just get back to me. Let me know." What happened was, I believe, and I'm guessing, is that they had whoever the dummy was that wrote that statement that this wall is going to protect this for centuries. So the state says, well, put up a black cloth or we won't go on and see anything. And then in turn, you go ahead and try to clean it up on the inside because it's going to all be contained. Well, it didn't contain it. It went off into both of state lands.
So that wall, was it really designed to last for centuries, this wall you're speaking of?
Well, I think it was purported to be that, and for centuries, in their own right.
And it was made up of what?
Bentonite slurry. Cement, whatever. It's kind of a cement wall with the... But it escaped.
Okay.
So here we have the state running around pretending that it's protecting the resources, and when something big pops up, oh, well, we can't handle it. We'll give it to the EPA. Well, did you go on the property? No, we didn't go on the property. This is a state because we don't have a Twix card.
Okay. I hear the answer as you speak. I hear it clear as day. What I hear is that the people need their own constitutional agency strictly to check and balance the state, the actual state in government itself. Without that, then this, what you're describing, will continue. The people have to form their own constitutional agency. And it's got to be serious, man. And it's got to be big. And they got to have like the ACLU and the Civil Rights Commission. The people have to have their own public constitutional.
You're suggesting
something.
I
don't know the right words, but it has to be on that scale. That's how you check them.
Having a civil rights commission is a solution?
No, I said a constitutional. You know, like the ACLU?
Right.
All right. And like the Civil Rights Commission, right? They need a public law, constitutional public law agency that's owned by the people.
Well, that's supposedly the Attorney General.
No, you can't know.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
I don't like to tug at something.
Okay.
That I don't get engaged in that fashion. But what I can say, the people have that, the Civil Rights Commission. And they gave it a name and they gave it a place, but they didn't give it any funding. So these are the examples I'm trying to offer is that the
even if it had funding, listen.
Well, let me.
It has to be a private institution.
Yeah.
It cannot be, and it's got to be well funded privately. Because when you come against the government, right? You even if it's for benevolent purposes, you know, to protect the people. Then you still have to have your own funding. You have to be self-supporting through your own efforts.
How do you take federal money? Okay, how do you propose it? Let's just break this down. I'm going to take it because you're throwing so much out there, and I'm chasing you just to get my words in. So I don't like that, number one. It's just if I get to say something, you get to say. You have all the time, and we can't say it today. Next week I have another show. You will.
Okay.
And there's nothing stringent here, but I don't like to waste listeners' time just talking in theory as if some demons and everything. I don't like that. I either try to give you specific examples, then you can use that as building blocks, because I don't like paranoia. I don't. I mean, if you remember. So here's the situation. This, what you're saying, you and I on the same sheet. I agree with you. But the people, now we take what you're suggesting and give money to the people, come up with something, and they fund it themselves.
Yes.
Right. So, in other words, you're conceding that what do we do? The money that the Attorney General has today is the people's money. You're proposing that we walk away and leave that and go create another fund and then.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
How realistic is that? Because you haven't.
It's very realistic.
But have you addressed the causes and the cause and effects that caused you to leave the bundle of money with these group of people?
Yeah, the evidence of the truth is before us every waking moment, and sometime in our dreams.
Yeah.
It's been proven over and over again every day that for the people, there's no representation. When I say for people, I'm not talking about the billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
They have all the representation you can imagine.
You know, many of us pray, right, and to whoever and whatever. But at some point, you pray for a world, in theory, that's going to be peaceful and loving and no violence and respecting other citizens and other people and the planet. We pray for that, right?
And go ahead.
Well, I mean, I hope you do. You know, I use the term.
Well, no, I'm. See, the law.
No. Well, I'm just listen to. I'm not trying to corner you, but let's say you don't, but there are others who do. So at some point they pray and they want this better world. You know where that better world starts? Is that within themselves they have to start living. Stop stealing, stop cheating, stop lying, stop whatever it is. You understand?
That's true, but then, there's no organization of this scale, quality.
But look, when we say an organization, remember now, we're individuals. That brain up there constitute an individual, and God only knows what goes on in those brains as individuals. So I think we got to step back and respect that, because if we lay the material out there for people, they can make their own decision. Because I would fear a world where Carol Cox come on Sunday morning, he says something, then the world act according to Carol Cox. That would scare the hell out of me, you know, honestly. But if I come every Sunday morning and lay out some tidbits here and there, you get to build an example. You get to see by example that the government is failing us. Then maybe we don't need to go and create another agency. We just need to dust off the agency and get rid of them and have stricter policies.
Yeah, but better than that, there needs to be an agency that's owned by the people, not owned by the government. You can't classify the government as the people anymore.
Anymore, but at one time you conceded that it was by the people, right? Or
yeah.
Are you not saying that, suggesting that?
I'm saying that the people are so preoccupied
mm-hmm.
that they can't really involve themselves in all this research. They barely can. The masses of people are in dysfunctional relationships. They have so much dysfunctionality in their life, their job, trying to go to school, trying to do all this, that by the time they're just trying to keep a roof over there, just the normal stuff takes up their whole life.
Mm-hmm.
You stand and then you got to worry about getting tickets.
Well, then who assembles in this grand force that you're proposing?
It can start with two people.
But I understand you say it's of the people, for the people, and then it's a new process. Well, if they're all busy, where then do we start?
Okay, hold on. It's just like any other corporation, like McDonald's or Walmart or anything, except for this corporation is a legal corporation for the people based on pure constitutional law. It ain't going to be based on civil law, none of that. No, it's going to be strictly interpretation of Constitution. Those readings you were giving about those writings, if they were analyzed strictly under the Constitution, you would know what went wrong immediately. But you have to have an agency in place that's so educated in pure constitutionalism that the paperwork can't lie.
Okay.
The state can't lie. They can't lie on paper no more.
Okay.
They can't manipulate on paper no more.
So here's how this works. Let's say in the purest form,
yes, sir.
That we're going to adopt your approach. And I'm not being facetious or disrespectful to you. This is a conversation.
Well, that's all right.
So in the purest form, the United States, this process that you're proposing, the United States, we have a constitution, whether we agree with it, whether we have concluded that now it has diminished in its authority, it's been watered down, whatever. We've been robbed of that, we the people. But can we agree that it did exist at one time? We had a constitution. So here's what I would say, caution everybody. It's good to have that theory, but we must be reminded, when that constitution was written, those men that sat in that house, in that forum, and wrote that constitution we're relying on the sweat and blood and tears of another human being to call slaves. And so we would have to address, rather than being theoretical, I'm saying you have to remind them and say, well, that sounds good, that Constitution sounds good, as you're proposing, but we must clean up everything to have this pure approach to things. Because the reality is, unless you get the weevils out of the wheat, you're just going to have foul-tasting bread, no matter what you do, whatever you introduce today, again. So these theories, I applaud you for advancing that, but the reality is, I think we already have it in place, and it's just about the people just simply need to be educated and be reminded of trickery. And you've been to a magic show?
No, sir.
Right, but if you've ever been to a magic show, sometimes it's annoying to have some guy sit there and go, I know how he did that. And other times, you know, you can appreciate it because you know it's magic.
Wait, slow down. Slow down for a minute. If you ever seen the movie The Prestige, when they created the real magic, they had to pass it off as sleight of hand because they knew the people wouldn't understand it was real.
Well, I
hope you get that metaphor.
Yeah.
The Prestige, the movie The Prestige, they went to the scientists, they went to Nikolai Tesla to make this machine that made it appear as if it was magic, fake magic.
Right.
But it wasn't. It was real. And I want you to remember that there is such a thing as real magic.
Well, if I meet you on the street and you ask me information, I will refrain from being theoretical because I think around us there's an abundance of information, hardcore facts. I don't need to tell you that the Federal Reserve is screwing us. When I look around and see people having to live on the streets, and I see that. I know that it's happening, and I see that we can't spend on social issues, but we can spend on bombs and bullets and planes. I understand all that, but in the matter of conveying it to others like myself, I have to refrain from being theoretical and say, you see that building over there? In 1901, the Illuminati came here as a taxi company and built it. But where's your facts? And I think we lose people when we continue to just throw out theories and boogabear.
With the cops. Yeah. You can't always get to the facts because you don't have enough resources.
You can start.
That's the point. But the Constitution itself is a fact.
But, okay, I agree with you on the Constitution if it's
a fact.
Yeah.
The question is, how is it applied and enforced?
Right. Well, I can only tell you, I would love to be part of that international discussion about booger bears in the wallpaper, but I'm just not entertained by that. It's way beyond
okay.
me, and I'd embrace you with your theories and what have you, but for me, I would like to see things in writing and have the ability to stand up and say to someone that's standing right there, you're screwing us over, and let's start working from there forward rather than to say there are some theories and then go preach them and never incorporate them or engage in getting hardcore facts. Hold on.
The example. Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead with your comment.
Oh, what's up, Carol Cox?
Yeah, you have a comment or question?
I will ask on the cell.
Okay, well, thank you, then. Good morning and aloha to you. Okay. Hey, caller, I lost you and sitting here with the buttons, but call back. But anyway, guys, what I'm trying to convey without being... So the state health department denies that they were. They say that it was the EPA made a typo in an official document claiming that the health department was notified by ASIG and its staff that there was a leak at the tank 2 and the fuel facility at Sand Island. So let's say we accept that. The state admits then They claim they didn't get notified in December 22nd of 2014. They were notified a month later, they claim, on January 21st, 2015. So let me figure this out now. If you were not notified in December 22nd, 2014, but you were notified a month later on the 21st of January, but then you didn't notify the public at all until a week later. So here's their report, or the press release submitted by Janice Okubo of the State Department of Health. And it states, recovery efforts underway for jet fuel leak at Airport Service Group facility. Honolulu, the State Department of Health, Hazardous and Emergency Response Office, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency are responding to a 1,000-barrel, 43,000-gallons release of jet fuel from an above-ground storage tank located in Sand Island Access Road at the Airport Service Group International, ASIG, facility. DOH received notification of the release on January 21st at 12 noon and immediately, and check this out now, immediately began oversight of response efforts that same day. The release does not pose a risk to drinking water, but could pose threat to coastal waters. Well, first of all, give you a little insight how the government manipulates facts and information. And these aren't government people. These are just people playing games with themselves, to be honest with you. There are some people in government that really know how to pull the wool over your eyes. This is just, it has gotten so bad that the oversight and is so dismembered and disfigured in that agency or in this state agencies that they dare say anything to you and smile at you at the same time. That's the way it is. They convene meetings. We have a spill. They tell us that a potential leak from a tank holding potentially 68,000 barrels of fuel, and they just what? Walk away and says, just call us if you figure out something. But then when it's discovered that it's in the ground. So what I did was I have filed a formal complaint with the federal agency, the Office of Pipeline Services, and hoping that they will in turn, they inform me they will be coming here in March to conduct an independent investigation based on some of the information. And they were en route because there's pipelines involved, and there's some rules and that they have to adhere to the facility. So I have filed that complaint, and I can only tell you that I'm hoping for the better, that there needs to be something done. The state agencies and all of those that are involved, and even the EPA, in my opinion, when I, the public, okay, I approach them, it's as if they spend lots and lots of time with the people, the companies, consultants, and what have you, and then they put something on the website, on their website, and then we're told when we read it and say, that can't be true, or there's some inaccuracies here, and we're told, oh, it was a typo, but it's an official, formal, legal document, binding. How could you put this in reports, the same thing, and then you tell half-truth, or you state half the facts? So this oil spill, or this fuel spill there at Sand Island, reminds me of, as I had said earlier, started to say, we had Red Hill, and then the state was involved with Gary Gill, and then they say, oh, the EPA is going to handle it. Whatever happened? Then we have molasses. Oh, the EPA is going to take care of it. And then we see a fizzle and a poof of we don't see any prosecution. Then now we have this, and we have other issues here. So there is a game being played by these agencies, And I say to you, submit to you, what is happening in the industry, industrial type incidences here, is that the tail is wagging the dog here. We don't have the expertise in the state agencies, and the state agencies put on a good show. They're overwhelmed, and I would normally be making apologies for them, but look, you can't have no money, have shortage of staff, have inept people or not experienced in, of the magnitude that you need, and then in turn, when it comes to when something happens, you become secretive, and the public can't have access and to information. It should be readily available. But what I was told, you see, back to this public release, press release that the state did give, they get the complaint and the information supposedly officially on the 21st of January, and it took them a week to notify the public that there was a leak. When asked now in person, why'd you do this? Well, we can't report everything to the public. See, when you can fragment and start to split hairs like that as a state agency, you're no longer a state agency. You become an implement of a corporation. And that is what we have here, folks. Our environment, I would hate to see what it really is if we could quantify the degradation, the pollution, and when you look at the sewage that we're spilling, the runoff, the chemicals, and all. I don't believe we could call this paradise. I believe that a tourist could file a lawsuit and call, get us for false advertisement. Honestly, because you go in the Wahiawa area, you have a Superfund site. You go to Campbell Industrial Park, you have a Superfund site. You go to Kaka'ako, you got a Superfund site. You go to Makua, you got a Superfund. You got military. You go to Pearl Harbor, all the signs there say don't eat the fish. In fact, don't look at them because they may, the light, the glowing from the radiation. Or don't touch them. They may, you know. Mercury left, 75 pounds of mercury left, and spills, and kids play with it, and what have you. Ladies and gentlemen, I can only submit to you, no theories here, just to say to you, taking back our country is a good idea, because there are some people here that have simply, they don't believe that they owe us any respect. They don't believe that they owe us anything. They have forgotten that government belongs to us, and they are hired as individuals to carry out the wishes of the people collectively. They're not doing that in here, and it's we're talking environment, but let's talk about medical. Let's talk about senior issues. If they're trying to farm it out to their friends, you're not going to be better served. You're not going to be best served. And I just submit to you that we, in the next week or so, we'll see another spill. The way we treat this planet, treat this state and the natural resources, I think we should be embarrassed and hold our noses up, because we can drive in our private communities and lock the gate. But the reality is we're all responsible for it. And at the end of the day, we're going to all pay for it, either health-wise or financially. And cancers, asthma, you name it. So keep it up. If we want to destroy our own home and ruin our own, foul our own nest, we're doing a good job. But I think we can stop. We can stop this snowball that's running down the hill and hold the state's feet to the fire and tell them we don't need actors rocking around pretending that they know what they're doing. And then when something big happens, oh, the Big Brother came to town. They're going to take care of him. What did Big Brother do? Gave us a glossy report, and nobody get prosecuted. So we'll talk to you next week, and I'm waiting to see someone go to jail. Aloha.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.